Hello, is that Scott Perry?
Yes, it is. Is this Ian?
This is Ian. Yeah, I'm calling you from London. How are you, friend?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm great. Okay, so how's the weather there?
It's kind of rainy and overcast a little and like in the 60s, but it is Florida. We have the best weather in the States, it seems like now. So I'll take it. It's not snowing, so it's good.
Good. Well, you live in a nice part of the world. You're working with Golf Channel at the moment, right? As the engineer there? Being with them.
I run the audio department here at Golf Channel.
Oh, brilliant. Okay.
So.
You know why I've called, though, don't you?
I've called because
on the 27th of April in 1994, you were kind of in your mid-career as the engineer at Crescent Moon Studios, which is very famous for, of course, the Miami Sound Machine, home for Emilio and Gloria Estefan, who you actually engineered on a number of their albums, correct?
I worked on, I was a tracking engineer on a lot of those records toward the end there, the last few. And then I would also assist in any, but like I worked with Iron Maiden for a month, and I worked on an Extreme record when they came through town, so I was kind of the second assist. I was the assistant anytime someone big came through town. Bette Midler came in. We would get a lot of, because we were in a resort town.
Yeah.
Basically, so a lot of times she would be on vacation and they'd just come in and want to record. And Arif Martin had a house in Miami.
Right.
He would just kind of show up with projects all the time. It was great. I mean, it was incredible. And this session was, ironically, I thought they were going to bring somebody else in to do it, and my boss Eric for NXS, and he said, no, I want you to do it. You're ready to do it. And it was a pretty, you know, I was very excited because it was like a time in my career. It was like, wow, okay, this is, you know, I've made the cut, and you know, my head, Eric Schilling, who engineered all Gloria's records, and I mentored under him. And he felt that, you know, you're fine.
Wow.
And it was incredible. And they had called, and I knew they were on tour, and they were just coming through town. And I honestly, there's a few, I can't remember if I picked them up from the airport or if they took a cab. I don't remember at all. But I do remember that I knew they were going to do a demo, you know, like doing, they were, you know, kind of like just getting an idea for a song together.
Yeah.
And I remember my Eric going, just be ready for anything. So I threw out, you know, a bunch of my, you know, 87 out. I had a C800G.
Yep.
We rented it. I think, doesn't Andy, it was a Fender Twin probably. Isn't that what Andy
plays? Yeah.
Yeah.
We're using I noticed they've got an SSL desk there now. Were you using that back then?
Yes. There was an SSL. It was, I think it was an 8K. It was,
right.
It was the film slash.
Good old British EQ, eh?
Yeah, it was all the E-Series EQs with the E-Series, all that. So they liked the fact they were used to an SSL, and they liked the sound. And I remember working out, well, what do they want to record? They want to go digital. Because Pro Tools didn't, I mean, it was there, but it wasn't like it is now. And they said, no, we want a 2-inch, no Dolby. I think it was no Dolby. I can't remember. Not that it matters, but... Yeah, they just wanted to track something they could walk with. That was a big deal.
Yeah.
And so I was just ready for anything. And they got there. I think it was in the afternoon, evening, almost, you know, we started around 6 o'clock when they got in. And you could tell they were tired, you know, but, you know, they were really excited to just record something. Like, they really had this idea in their head. And you know, you could tell that Michael was, he had a notepad and he kept scribbling.
Mm.
And Andy had a guitar. And we plugged in, and the first thing they did when it got in, they just kind of relaxed, and then they wanted to order some food, but they wanted to start working. And they had a little Korg, I think it was a Korg drum machine.
Wow.
Roland Korg, and they just kind of worked on loops and to get the idea down.
It wasn't an Alesis SR-16, was it? Because Michael used to have one of those. I just don't know whether if they were using that.
I remember it was like a handheld with pads on the top.
Right, yeah.
It might have been that. I can't remember offhand. That's probably what it was then. I just remember
little
machine.
Yeah, a little small unit. Yeah, that sounds like it sounds like his Alesis SR-16 it was called. Cool, okay.
And I remember Andy, you know, Michael was very, they were both tired, but they were funny. They were, you could tell they were friends, you know.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't collaborators, they were, you know, they were mates, they were friends. It was really neat, the collaboration between them, because usually by the time artists came to where I was, they had already, I mean, they were done. We're a mixing studio.
Yeah, of course.
So we were, it was fun to see the collaboration and just, you know, the overall, they were excited to record. They were ready to get this, you know, get their ideas down. And I remember we had the, you know, Andy played in the control room, and we had a line out to the studio so he could play through the amp. But I remember him. I had a 57 and a 421 set up to go on it, and he looked over and he saw the big C800 G2 bike, and I'm not the Sony, you know, the one that had the heat sink on the back. And he knew about it, and he was asking about it. I'm like, well, we'll put on the guitar. He goes, and I had it set up as a vocal mic. Said, yeah, I'd like to hear it. I remember he really liked the sound of it. He really liked the way the C800 and then. Later down the road, I actually gave him the information to get one of those mics. I'm not sure if he ever did, but I remember he was like, "Ooh, what's that?" And it was just funny when we tracked, you know, 3 minutes of the drum loop. Andy said, "Oh, I'm going to play on it now. I'm going to get the song format down."
Yeah.
And the minute he plugged in, it was like, "Yep, you know, it's him. That's his sound." You know, it was just instantly. The minute he started playing, it was here every. You knew who it was playing the guitar. It
yeah,
was the guitar player for NXS. You know, it was like, "Wow, okay, this is pretty cool." So, by the time we got that down, the food came. I remember they ate a ton of sushi. And
when you responded to me the other day online, you did say that you can remember as if it was yesterday. And I have to say, being 20 years ago, that must have made quite an impression on you for you actually even remember what they ordered in.
Yeah, it was definitely, you got little points in your career when you're like, I looked up to these guys. I mean, you know, I was a fan. And, you know, I felt very honored to be, you know, to be there with them, you know, and to be part of a creative process. I mean, yeah, I've been with other artists, and, you know, you had to be professional, but it was definitely a moment in my career where I was like, wow, this is really a, you know, something neat. Because I was doing so much Latin music and so many other, you know, other projects, and not to degrade that. You know, but it was just cool.
Well, it was a specialist studio, wasn't it? Well, that studio's actually broke the Latin music into the mainstream.
Oh, yeah. It was, you know, people came from far and near to record there. And, you know, record with Eric, who was, you know, I was lucky to mentor under, I know this is about NXS, but I was very lucky to have mentored under a great engineer like Eric.
Yeah.
You know, and he just told me, I mean, one of the things he told me was be ready for anything and just remember you're there, just capture it. You just don't make the artist wait.
Yeah.
You know, and that just stuck in my head. Just make sure you're ready for anything. So I just made sure I was you know, ready to record and as fast as possible, but, you know, do a good job at the same time.
Were you aware where that project went to? I don't know if you had a chance to look at the article I wrote some years back, but
yes, I did, and I've always, you know, people ask you. I got out of the music business shortly thereafter. In '95, I left to go to NFL Films, so I did some music there and did a lot of music for sports. But that was toward the end of my kind of music side of things. So I always said, yeah, I got to. You know, cut a demo with, you know, NXS one night, and I don't know if anything ever came of it, and I never really researched it either, you know, I just knew it was Deliver Me, and I knew it was going to be a big hit, but, you know, the tragedy of his passing, it just kind of was like, well, I don't know if anything ever happened with it, you know?
Yes.
So your article was so interesting, you know, I couldn't wait to go home and tell my wife, and, you know, she was like, you know, I have a new wife now, and
yep.
I told her the story, and she was like, wow, that, you know, that's incredible, you know, so it's just funny.
Well, you know, when I originally wrote this article, and it was, but it was some years ago, and
2004. I think it said 2004.
2004, yeah, okay, so it's some time ago that I kind of researched it. The only thing I really had to go on was the cover that I have, and I worked on it with Mario and Jackie Ferrari in Switzerland, and of course I was living in Australia then. It's really a great privilege to actually talk to you tonight, Scott, after all these years.
Yeah, and to hear about this,
you know, firsthand. So I'm going to let you talk some more. Just tell me whatever else you can remember.
It's funny because we ate, and the studio was very, the downstairs where we recorded had just been built within the year, and it was very artsy. And it was a big circular couch where we all sat around and ate. We all kind of ate together, and, you know, you don't know, and you don't want to pry, but Michael was very nice. Like, he was just a nice guy, you could tell, you know. But they were very focused that night on getting this song to a point, and they were talking about, and I can't remember who, I remember Andy looking over at me basically saying, you know, if you don't screw this up and you do it okay, you might get credit on the record.
Yeah.
And it was just funny, because, you know, Andy... I don't want to say he wasn't as alcoholic as Michael was. He was a little more dry, you know. It wasn't that he was mean. He was a little, you know, dry. And I said, okay, don't worry. I won't. You know, I'll try not to erase anything or screw up. And, you know, he kind of laughed. But I think they were going to work with Don Was possibly
right.
The next record.
Yeah.
Do you remember who was supposed to produce the next record?
Well, they had a number of different people that worked on it. This particular track, actually, they ended up taking it to London and did a bit more work on it. And George Martin's son, actually.
I saw that, yes.
Yeah, and then from then, Chris actually finished it.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Well, they were very excited about, you know, the tour, getting done with the tour, and then starting to record again, and this was part of the writing process. Mm. And, this is a funny story, though, that I was ready to record the vocals, and I'm thinking, I'm all excited as a young, you know, engineer.
Yeah.
I'm going to record, you know, Michael's vocals for a possible song. And I had an 87 set up, you know, going through an M1 mic pre through an LA-2A, you know, very clean path.
Yep.
And they looked at me, and they go, no, that's not how we do it. And I went, oh, okay, what do you want to do? And he goes, I just want to sing, you know, an 87, you know, handheld or 57 right here between the speakers at the control room.
Hmm.
And I went, oh, okay. So we had a rehearsal room that had some, you know, handheld mics. So my Sean ran up and grabbed one. I ran the cable, plugged it right in the SSL, and that's how we tracked the vocal. And he wanted to be, he sat between the Genlex and sang the song. And it was really interesting because I was punching and I was looking right at him.
Yeah.
So, you know, on the SSL, you have the transport control. So it was very hard, and I didn't want to look at him while he was singing because I didn't want to make him feel, you know, strange or anything.
Yeah, but he's probably been used to having people look at him though while he's singing. But yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
It was so. I just that's one of the things I remember vividly was he was singing, and I could feel that, you know, his breath coming across as he was singing in the microphone that track, and it was stuff that I never experienced an artist doing that before.
Mm.
You know, it was very. You know, I felt very part of the creative process, even though I really was. I was just very captured.
Yeah.
It was a very unique experience. And
so they were actually, you know, writing the song as you were there. I mean, you mentioned that we started to work on the lyrics.
Yeah.
I mean, you read what I wrote, and I only put that down as a surmising as I thought it might have panned out, you know.
Right. And yeah, I know you know, it's funny. I read your article. I had all the great recording microphone ready. I had, you know, the big reverb ready to go, you know, because I know that, you know, the slap they would do, and I had a delay set in, and they just, it just dry, you know, they were just dry, you know, stick it to tape, you know, and I mean, he just started belting, I mean, right from the top of that song, he couldn't sing it fast, you know, he just wanted to get it out, and it was a neat, interesting night, and then, you know, he doubled some parts and did some harmonies on it. I think from the demo, and we got done at around 1 a.m. And I actually drove them to the hotel where they were staying. So we got in the car, and they looked at me and they went, "Oh, we want to take the 2-inch, but we need a clone."
Yeah.
So I remember going back. I dropped them off, went home and slept for a little, and I came back at, like, you know, rare in the morning to do the clone. you know, copy the 24 track over, and then an intern took the tape back, the original 2-inch, back to the hotel for them. And I think they were flying out the next day, or I can't remember, but it was a quick trip. Mm. So that was that was my 5 minutes with, you know, Michael and Andy and NXS. So.
Right. I notice here, and you probably saw it too on Michael's official site here, that the cover that I scanned in, and from memory now, it looks like it's, because it's got master and rate 44.1K and so on, it's no doubt ADAT tape, I should say.
7030, yeah. We had just bought Sony 7030 DAT machine.
Yeah, I meant DAT, not ADAT. I've got ADAT on the main at the moment because I'm building a new studio here for my students, a new digital audio network linking everything up with Cat 5, you know, and using this new Dante technology. But anyway, going back to what you're saying, yeah, it was 20 past midnight when you printed this off.
Yeah.
And
it was late, yeah. Because we left by the time we printed off and got everything packed up. They were tired, and they said, you know, take it easy. You know, I drove them, you know, and I can't remember where they were staying, because we were right near kind of South Beach, and I think they were staying at a hotel near the airport, possibly.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want them to have to take a cab. You know, I'm like, these are two really famous guys, and you know, I said, I'll drive you. Yeah, no problem. So they hopped in my car, and I drove them to the hotel. So.
Wow. And of course, you know, this is on the back of Kick that had come out in the late 80s. It had actually been the biggest selling album in the U.S., which is amazing.
Yeah, it was huge. Yeah, it was huge. I mean, as a kid who grew up around music, I mean, you know, they were, for me, they were right up there with, you know, the Police and every other band I listened to. You know, they were iconic, you know, and
because that's really strange for Australians to hear, because I was teaching in a high school at that point. I was at a gig in Australia as a guitarist where NXS would come through, and it was one of the major rock venues in the country. I was in the house band there. So I got to meet a lot of the bands and international groups that came through. But I remember after I left there and I started teaching at a local high school, that all the kids there were crazy about NXS, and they had just kind of, you know, come to the fore. That this was the early 80s. And, of course, they went overseas, and Australia didn't see a great deal of them. I remember seeing a 60 Minutes, which is like a current affairs show that's run on a Sunday night in Australia. And I remember they tried to bring across, hey, these guys are doing very well in America, you know, and they're doing very well in Europe. But the average Australian didn't fathom the success that this Australian band were making at the time. And it's only when I actually went to study in the States, and I was there in like in the 80s, that people started to say to me, you know, bands like that point, Air Supply, and also, they were a bit earlier than NXS. Yeah, it was like a big shock to me to see the following that they're having in the U.S. and how big that was.
Yeah, they were definitely, they were a big band in the States, and it was definitely, you know, something that I knew the levity of how big it was working with them that on that project. You know, even though it was a demo, and I realized they were just, you know, getting some ideas down, but it,
well, it turned out to be a great song, and it was ironic that it was written on, if you've seen some of the world events that were taking place there in that article that I wrote.
Yeah, it was interesting, that stuff that, and you know, it's funny, I've been doing this for a long time, and when I read your article about the events that were going on, you know, when you're in a studio and in that atmosphere, you have no idea. You know, I remember when OJ was being chased down in the car. I was working with Manhattan Transfer.
Yes.
And I was just such a weird, it was a very strange day, but, you know, rarely historically did I have any idea what was going on during the course of the day, because if I wasn't in the studio, I used to do live sound, so I was always working, so it was definitely interesting to see what was going on that weekend or that during that time period. I will say this much, when I saw the news of his passing, I definitely was, you know, I didn't know him, but I was sad, because I could tell he was a good soul. and he was so talented. And it was, it was sad. His passing.
It's very, very sad. It was. Yeah. Well, it struck everyone.
But I mean, that's what I remember. I mean, I just remember the two guys. They were having fun, and but they were focused on, you know, cutting this demo and getting it, you know, sticking it on the tape and getting their idea down. And there was, you know, at the end of the night, you could tell they were tired. There was definitely a feeling of satisfaction that, you know, they had, okay, we've got something to go on. We've got something to go from here.
I was saying this is a song that they were actually getting together to add to their greatest hits, which has gone to number one in Australia. I don't know if you know that at the moment, course of a mini-series that was screened over 2 weeks, 2 weeks ago, about Michael and his life. Yeah, it will probably come to the States. It definitely will come to the States, but it captured the entire nation. Kick is actually number two, and I think Greatest Hits number one in Australia as we speak.
Wow. That's fun. I just can't tell you how great it, you know, it's just so neat that something that I remember, you know, and something was such an important part of my life that I just kind of have always been like, you know, and you know, just to talk about it and remember it with somebody that, you know.
Definitely. Yeah. Yep. I think I know another artist over, another engineer over here that I recently talked to, Chris Kimsey, who was worked with Michael. He'd worked just a couple of months before you on the Rolling Stones symphonic music with Michael. And he spoke so highly of Michael. Yeah, Michael recorded. And Chris said to me, and you know, Chris was the guy that, he was the engineer on the biggest selling live album ever, which was Frampton Comes Alive. But he did all of many of the early Rolling Stones albums, I think from Sticky Fingers on. Now, when he did the symphonic music of the Rolling Stones, he said at the top of his list to have as a guest vocalist was Michael Hutchins. And so the other, of course, was Mick Jagger. Yeah, so
Sean and I, the second assistant, were very close friends. And actually, ironically, you know the artist Jimmy Cliff? The reggae artist,
yes,
Sean Chambers, who was the second on the session.
Yep,
he is Jimmy Cliff's nephew.
Okay,
so it was ironic that Sean. I lost track of Sean. I don't know, but he was related to Jimmy Cliff.
Well, I noticed he's still doing some recording. He seems to have a break, but I did a bit of checking on him, and sounds like he's doing a bit more work again.
Yeah, he's around. I'm actually mixing a show right now.
Oh, I better let you go.
I kind of hop back on it.
Yep, you better let you go. So
my information, and just leave me a message, call me. It was really nice talking to you. And, you know, I didn't know Michael, but, you know, he was a great guy. And you could tell he was a good person. He was a good soul. So, you know, if I'm a cliff note in their brief, you know, in the history, I'm pretty happy about that. So it's very cool.
Okay.
Thanks for reaching out to me and getting in touch, definitely, okay?
Okay, no problem, Scott. And fantastically, thank you for your time. And congratulations on a good take.
Excellent.
Okay.
Thank you for getting in touch and letting me know.
Okay.
I can't tell you how great that makes me feel.
Well, it's fantastic that we've got this interview, and I'll certainly you'll certainly see it, hear it as well up on Michael's official site. Thanks so much, mate.
Okay.
Have a great day. Bye.